listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. It's been nearly 2.5 years since Turkey shot down a Russian fighter over Syria in November of 2015, creating huge tensions between the two neighbors. That period, however, has been practically an eternity in geopolitics. In the intervening period, President Donald Trump was elected, and relations between Russia and the U.S. both deteriorated and began to change under the new president. The relationship between Turkey and Russia has also changed substantially since November of 2015, a time that many call the low point in relations between the two countries. It was within that context that Russia's President Vladimir Putin went to Ankara on Tuesday and met with Turkey's President Recep Erdogan. The two presidents held a press conference in Ankara Tuesday afternoon, and we bring that to you in its entirety.
My honorable friend, Mr. Putin, members of the delegation, distinguished members of the press, I would like to welcome all of you.
Russia Federasyonu Başkanı Sayın Putin ve heyetini.
First and foremost, I would like again to express my satisfaction with the fact that we are hosting a meeting with Mr. Putin and the honorable delegation. In this call, I'd like to thank and celebrate with my friend Mr. Putin his victory in the presidential election. This is the first visit of Mr. Putin after he won the election, and that certainly is a very symbolic fact that he decided to come here. This visit of Mr. Putin is another demonstration to the high level of relations between our countries. Also, would like to express the condolences to the people of Russia because of the tragedy which happened in Kemerovo.
Çoğunun çocuk olması acıyı daha da artırmıştır.
Is of such üst düzey iş birliği konseyinin
7. toplantısını az önce tamamlamış bulunuyoruz.
Many children died.
Konsey toplantısı kapsamında yaptığımız baş başa ve heyetler arası görüşmelerde ilişkilerimizi tüm boyutlarıyla gözden geçirme imkanı bulunuyoruz.
Tete-a-tete meetings and meeting between the delegation members, we compared our notes from the current state of affairs and cooperation between the countries during our one-on-one meeting and during the meetings between the council members. A number of questions have been discussed.
We need gerek askeri, gerek siyasi, gerek ticari,
to say one thing. The political dialogue we have is influencing very positively our relations in other fields. Cultural, humanitarian, economic cooperation is also on the rise. Comparing to the last year, the trade, according to our calculation, has increased by 21%. It is now exceeds $22 billion. There is no doubt that our tasks are even more ambitious, our goals are more ambitious. We would like to reach the level of trade as high as $100 billion. In terms of services and investments, we need to follow through the current projects as soon as possible, and that will help us to advance at a faster pace on the track of reaching that $100 billion level. We've laid the first brick at the AKU MPP site. We'd like to see the commissioning of the first power unit in 2023. I do hope that this process will be even more fast-paced.
Tabii şu anda belirlenen rakam
that the commissioning will happen even faster, take place even sooner. So far, over $22 billion will be invested.
Ülkemize kazandırılmasında değerli dostumun tabii çok büyük emekleri katkısı oldu ve bununla birlikte Türkiye enerjisinin
my honorable friend has contributed much to the successful implementation of this project.
And thanks to
these achievements, we will meet the needs of our country in energy. The second pipeline of the Turkish stream is currently in construction.
2019 yılında
our humanitarian ties, our social ties are also enjoying your eyes. In 2019, we will have a number of events dedicated to fostering our cultural relations, and I mean cross years of culture and education. The cultural fund named after Yunus Emre has been opened in Moscow, and a similar center has been opened in Ankara, and that is another testimony to the fact that we are determined to push forward our relations. The number of Russian citizens which have visited Turkey has reached the figure of 4,700,000 people. That means that Russia is the top country in terms of the number of tourists coming to Turkey. This year, I believe, the number of tourists will reach a figure of 6 million people. I'd like to fast-track the liberalization of the visa regime. First and foremost, we paid our attention to the Syrian issue and other regional matters as part of our talks today. The Astana process resulted in creation of de-escalation zones. Luckily, we have overcome many difficulties on that way. We prevented large-scale, massive violence and loss of lives.
Yarın İranlı mevkidaşımızın da katılımıyla yapacağımız üçlü zirve.
We respect the memorandum, and I'm sure that rigorous compliance will yield more results on the way. We will also have a number of meetings with other counterparts as per the group or guarantors. During the summit, which we will be hosting, we will discuss in every detail the Syrian issue and other issues as well. We will be discussing the matters that have to do with the settlement of the crisis. Using this opportunity, I'd like to say that my honorable friend, Mr. Putin, we discussed the olive branch operation in Syria. I briefed my counterpart on the operation in Afrin. That operation,
inshallah, bundan sonra da Suriye'de istikrarın tesisi. Huzur ve güvenliğin sağlanması
means that we would like to ensure our integrity and our safety as well as the integrity of Syria. I do hope sincerely that we will continue cooperating with Russia, installing greater peace and security in the region. Our Russian friends and we are in constant dialogue on these and many other issues. On our agenda, we believe that the future of Syria should not be left to the ISIS or the so-called Democratic Union. We are focusing our cooperation on the interests we share. Turkish members of the mass media, within the last 15 years, our good neighboring relations, respect we have towards each other, have been manifested in many, many examples. All that goes to show a truly high level of relations, which is for the benefit of our people and for many other countries. Certainly have tried to poison relation between Russia and Turkey, but luckily we've stood to that test. All these provocations yielded no results, and our relations have been reinforcing as Damascus steel. The 2 days high-level Cooperation Council is another step on the way to reinforce our relations even to a greater magnitude. I'd like to welcome my counterpart and delegation of Russia, and I hope that this our meeting, as many others, will yield more results and more benefit to our countries. Thank you very much, Honorable Mr. President of Turkey, ladies and gentlemen. First and foremost, I'd like to note that the today's agenda is very substantive, is full of meetings and discussions. Mr. President and I discussed key issues pertaining to our bilateral relations, as well as a number of issues of regional and international importance. Later on, during the High-Level Cooperation Council, we, together with heads of major companies and ministers, discussed in every detail the whole gamut of cooperation in these fields of politics, security, economics, humanitarian ties have also been part of that discussion. We've outlined the plans for further work to do. During these meetings, we signed a number of intergovernmental and interministerial documents, and the relevant authorities and bodies are now to create a platform for further cooperation. I'd like to say that our relations have been gradually growing and enhancing. We have a very active political dialogue. Last year, Mr. Erdogan and I had 8 full-scale meetings. We are in very close contact, as well as our political and military bodies are also in a contact, as well as a joint strategic group. The ties between the ministries and parliaments of our countries are also on the rise. We discuss in every detail the cooperation between the business circles of our countries. Today, the closest attention was paid to trade and economic and investment cooperation. Very important coordinating role is being played by the joint intergovernmental Russian-Turkish Commission. I'd like to say with much satisfaction that in 2017 the trade increased, as Mr. President said. Calculations are that we have a growth of much as over 40%, reaching the figure of $22.2 billion. We've started to import many products from Turkey, and Turkey is now rated 7th in the list of key partners of Russia in terms of trade. We are determined to increase investments even further on. That will be achieved through the creation of a joint investment platform with participation of the Turkish Fund and Russian Direct Investment Fund. We also see that the atomic nuclear energy sector is another field in where we cooperate successfully. Mr. Erdogan and I, we laid down the first bricks, starting the construction of the first nuclear power plant named Akyü in Turkey. We plan to commission it by the year 2023, which will commemorate the 100th anniversary of Turkey. Also, we are working on the Turkish Stream project. We are constructing the two pipelines running through the bottom ice of the seas. That will make it easier for us to pump the gas to Europe if the countries of Europe want it, ensuring a higher energy security of the region and every country of it. We see much prospects in cooperation in the field of metals, vehicle manufacturing, agricultural goods production, as well as we believe that more cooperation can come in the fields of scientific research and development, high tech, and others. We do cooperate in the field of military. We've agreed to dispatch the air defense system S-400 Triumph to Turkey, as well as delivering a number of Russian high-efficient and prospective military equipment and hardware. We discussed many issues pertaining to that field. We do pay special attention to humanitarian ties and people-to-people relations. We see very dynamic development in the flow of tourists from Russia to Turkey last year, 4.7 million people. And next year, we hope that figure will rise to around 6 million people. In that context, we discuss easing out the visa regime, agreeing on certain documents which would allow for a non-visa entry. We heard the reports from the heads of ministries and bodies of our countries, the Syrian National Dialogue Congress in Sochi, and the recent meetings in Astana. Have seen the discussion, many steps to be taken to finally settle the Syrian crisis, reinforce the ceasefire regime, and as well as creating an environment for a Syrian political dialogue. Mr. President said that already tomorrow we are to discuss these matters during a three-lateral meeting with the head of Iran, Mr. Rouhani, with exchange of views and opinions on other regional and international issues. In conclusion, I'd like to thank my friend Mr. Erdogan for such substantive talks, for very warm welcome for our delegation. Further development of our cooperation meets every interest of both Russia and Turkey. It also serves the interests of stability and peace in this region and in other regions as well. Thank you for your attention.
Teşekkür ediyoruz. Şimdi soru-cevap faslına geçiyoruz. Önce konuklarımızdan soru alacağız. İlk soru.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
TV'den. Pavel Zarubin.
The first question.
Добрый вечер, Павел Зарубин.
Russia TV.
У меня вопрос к обоим лидерам.
I would like to ask both presidents. The main drivers for developing the bilateral relations are the major projects such as the Turkish Stream and S-40 complexes. batch. But still, there's some confrontation between Russia and other countries. Do you see any factors that could negatively influence the bilateral relations here? Thank you.
You mentioned some certain negative, provocational factors in international affairs. Well, we see none in the line of cooperation with Turkey. On the contrary, we have very constructive and good relations. They are on the rise. That is reflected in the results of our trade and cooperation activities. It has also been reflected in the pace of implementing major projects such as the Turkish Stream, such as the MPP construction. As regards gas deliveries to Turkey and Turkish Stream, a very big project indeed, we've been working on it for many years, and we've been in contact with our European partners to construct a second pipeline, so-called Turkish Stream 2. I hope that will be followed through and that will be happening. So far we have talks, only talks with them, while with Turkey we've already almost implemented this project. We are about to complete the construction. So that's another testimony to the quality of relations. Turkey is a priority partner for us, a very important one. We comply with every obligation we have regarding a number of regional matters, issues we confront, and fields where we cooperate. I see no problems today which could impede further development of our relations with Turkey.
Öncelikle ben değerli arkadaşımıza şunu söylemek isterim. Tabii S4
first of all, I would like to say that you mentioned the S-40 military complexes. This decision was made by Turkey, and we stand by it, and our friends, the Russian Federation, have responded positively in response to what we asked for. So this led to us striking an agreement, and we have reached an agreement concerning the supplies of the S-400s. So that's a complete matter, and I would like to say that we managed well. Russia delivered the missiles even before the deadline. As for what you mentioned about the nuclear plant in Naukuyu, well, this has been implemented with some delay because due to the operational issues at the nuclear plant, we lost about 10% of the energy, and as a result, Russia did undertake some measures which led to alleviating the problems, so it has helped streamline the process, and it also helps raising the necessary human resources to operate the plant. So we're very happy with the process, that is the way it is ongoing. Also, today we had this ceremony, and we are hopeful for a better image of our country on the international scene. I have a question to President Putin. Did you discuss today during your meeting with Mr. Erdogan the Skripal's case and the UK's position on this case, and what were you discussing? And what is your assessment of this case, especially in the view of the UK's recent developments?
We discussed it briefly. Mr. Erdogan raised certain questions. I laid out the position of Russia. As you know, I've heard about this incident from mass media. I mentioned it many times. I can only add that according to the information coming from international experts, around 20 countries of the world can be developing such nerve agents. Around 20 countries are capable of that. Scotland Yard, as you know, has officially publicly announced that it would need as much as 2 months to conduct a proper investigation. And just recently, as I've been informed, the Director General of a laboratory 8 kilometers away from the incident site said in his interview to Sky News that his employees, his laboratory, has failed to find out the country of origin of that nerve agent, and they cannot identify the country of origin of that agent, and they cannot say that that nerve agent was produced in Russia. In that context, first, we are very much surprised by the speed of that anti-Russian campaigning, and I'd like to inform you now, well, we did already just that tomorrow we'll have a session of the Executive Committee of the OPCW in order to discuss and to sort this out. At least 20 questions are to be discussed tomorrow, and I sincerely hope that that discussion will put that matter at rest finally. Indeed, we are very much interested in having a full-scale, transparent investigation. We want to be part of that investigation, and we expect that we'll receive the necessary documents and clearance, because it has to do with Russian citizens, and the Russian Investigative Committee has opened a case, and it merits a proper investigation.
Habertürk'ten Mahmut Gürer.
I represent Habertürk newspaper. I would like to ask President Putin first. It is well known that Turkey ran the olive branch operation, and Russia what is your attitude towards the YPG and the so-called Democratic Union organizations? And my second question is to President Erdogan. What do you expect from Russia in this year?
Что касается нашего сотрудничества в борьбе с терроризмом.
As for the fight against terrorism, we have the following stance. We cooperate with Syria, other countries truly interested in putting an end to the Syrian conflict. First and foremost, we would like to ensure territorial integrity of Syria, its sovereignty, and elimination of any roots of terrorism on its territory. On that track, we've been cooperating, and we will be cooperating with Turkey. As for the future of Syria and the political dialogue, we believe that the Kurdish people are part of the multinational country of Syria, and they have the right to take part in every political process in Syria. They have the right to find their place in the future of Syria. So certainly, we believe that any processes in that context should be taking place with utmost coordination of all stakeholders. If that is not happening, then there will be no results. As for who is to participate in the political process and what place will be attributed to every group of people, that is up to the Syrian people only.
Son soruyu da A Haber'den Lamia Ayhan'dan alıyoruz.
Sayın Putin'e sormak istiyorum. S-400 hava savunma sistemlerinin daha erken tarihe alınmak yönünde President bir karar aldığınızı söylediniz. Bu noktada Türkiye'ye net bir tarih verilecek
misiniz? Teknoloji paylaşımı ortak üretim konusundaki delivery of S-400 missiles to an earlier date. What's your opinion about the joint production of S-400 missiles? And I would like to ask President Erdogan whether you talked about other possible supplies in addition to S-400s.
I've said already that we discussed many matters, including the enhancement of our cooperation, broadening the scope of the projects we implement together. As for an early delivery of S-400 air defense system, we've done that upon the request of Turkey, our Turkish friends, with fast-track the production, the manufacturing of these systems. We agreed on the price, which is certainly important. As for joint manufacturing, well, as you know, giving the technologies to Turkey is not about trust or political cooperation. It has to do with only commercial interests, and that can be settled at the level of, well, relevant ministries. There is no military or political agenda in that. We see no limits on that track of cooperation. We see no obstacles on that way.
Sayın Başkan'ın da ifade ettiği gibi,
dear friends, just like President Putin just said, in regard to the S-400 missile systems, we have an agreement in place, and the relevant companies shall continue working on producing, and we have agreed everything, including the costs. And there's no problem concerning the delivery date. We reached an agreement on that too. As for any other projects, they are possible. And Russian companies are open to cooperation. And the relevant agencies and the defense complex will be conducting relevant negotiations and holding meetings, and we'll keep you posted. Thank you very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Words have consequences and threatening actions can be very dangerous. This is the atmosphere engulfing the West's relations with Russia. The poisoning incident in the UK has yet to be explained to the public. But this has not stopped the British and American governments from playing the role of judge, jury, and executioner. Crosstalking toxic relations, I'm joined by my guest, Charles Shoebridge in London. He is a security analyst and a former UK Army and counterterrorism intelligence officer. In Brussels, we have Annie Michonne. She is a former British intelligence officer and writer. And in Washington, we cross to James Jatris. He is a former advisor to the U.S. Senate Republican leadership. All right, as always, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Annie, let me go to you first in Brussels. You know, you were only on last week, but the more we learn about what happened with this poisoning incident, there's only been one thing that has been consistent. Russia did it. Everything else keeps changing. It's very fluid, except for the conclusion. Reflect upon that, Annie, please.
Well, the more we know, the less we know, apparently, because we have a situation where, one, the police had to build up an evidential chain, two, they had to identify the substance, three, they had to find a motive. But forget all that in terms of a classic investigation technique. Within a few hours, the British media was saying it must have been Russia because he's a Russian spy. And within a week, the Russian, the British government was saying it was Russia. So we have a situation where things have escalated out of control in hugely fast ways. And to date, a month later, we still don't even know exactly how the so-called substance was applied to these two people. It was supposed to be an incredibly toxic substance, but two of the victims have survived and are recovering, and Skripal himself is apparently in a stable condition. And three, we still don't know what he might have been involved in, which might have created a motive over the last 8 years since he had safe haven as a former MI6 agent, finding safe sanctuary, having a pension in the UK. So the whole thing is a mess. The fact that the British government rushed in to condemn Russia is a mess. The fact that they have apparently shared so-called intelligence with other allies in order to strong-arm them into trying to make sure that they expel diplomats is a mess. And it's just escalating. It's metastasizing in a really frightening way for international relations.
Yeah. You know, Charles, what one of the tragedies of all this is that how do you walk this back? Because the British government and the American government have invested themselves so much into this before there was an investigation, before there was discussion of evidence. It's almost impossible for them to walk back now. I mean, they've got this story, and if they can't prove, they'll just say, just trust us, which fewer and fewer people actually do that anymore. They've actually boxed themselves in, and this is what I think is going to be very dangerous, because if evidence is, we have this chemical weapons organization, if they don't back this up, okay, there's going to be a lot of egg on a lot of people's faces. And with the political environment in the UK, that will not be permitted. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, of course, some of us have argued in the past, and I know you carried it yourself, that, of course, why would the British and the Americans wait for an investigation? Because they decided to take certain actions, as we know, to put in chain this, as you've pointed out, largely unstoppable train of expulsions and tit-for-tat actions against different countries taking action against Russia. Why would they wait for an investigation if there's any possibility at all that investigation may not produce the results that they want? And then if they don't produce the results that the government wanted, of course, they then couldn't take those actions. What's bizarre to me is that perhaps trying to fend off these kind of criticisms in the last few days, the United Kingdom government has actually hardened its position. If you look at the statements coming from the Foreign Office, from the British ambassador in Moscow and so on, it seems that any doubt whatsoever that Russian government is responsible for this has been removed. British government and the Foreign Office have specifically, explicitly said over the last few days, repeatedly, so we know it's a proper considered message, there is no doubt that the Russian government was responsible for this. But actually, of course, there is a great deal of doubt. And I think people understand this, not just in Russia, but also amongst European capitals. Now, we've got a situation where Annie is quite right to mention that the suggestion has been, and certainly one that's been carried a lot by the British media, that if European capitals, some of them, not all of them, have backed the British government in its assessment, publicly at least, then they must have been shown convincing evidence. And yet we can see from the comments of, for example, some German politicians and also the Czech president himself, while saying he backed the expulsions because you need to stand with an ally when it asks you to stand with them, he said very pointedly, we need to see evidence. And that suggests very strongly to me that they actually haven't been shown evidence. Yep. They have just backed Britain because Britain has very pointedly asked them to do so, and allies stand with allies. But eventually, Britain is going to have to produce some evidence. Well, and if it doesn't, you're right. Egg is going to be on people's faces.
I think, Jim, you know, echoing what Charles did say there, I think that's really where the U.S. angle is. I think, of course, London was elbowing European capitals to follow. But the Americans, when they put their foot down, particularly when it comes to NATO, people begin to fall in line. What's really interesting is that the media spin is that there is unity in the Atlantic Alliance. Actually, it's actually just the opposite. There isn't a whole lot of unity. There are members of NATO who said they're not going to expel ambassadors and they're not going to get into this parlay here. So, I mean, if you were honestly to take a look at it, the elbowing and pushing people around has not been nearly as effective, I think, as London and Washington had hoped for. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, that's right. If Charles and Annie will indulge me a little Yankee arrogance here, I've always liked to think of the UK as our poodle. But it seems in this case, the Americans are the British poodle, that they throw these accusations out there, show us no proof whatsoever, but the Americans say, well, if it's good enough for our British friends, it's good enough for us. And that's what's got at least most of the allies going through the motions. You notice that the vast majority of Russian diplomats that were thrown out came from the United Kingdom, from the United States, from Ukraine. And then you look at the continent, one or two here and there from each country, and then several countries like Bulgaria and Greece that have refused to do so. So I think that the United States is the necessary muscle to back up the British accusations to get these other countries intimidated and on board. But what, you know, this in a way is like Tony Blair's swearing by the American lies on WMDs in Iraq, except now we're doing it just because our British friends say so.
Well, Annie, obviously it plays really well into the Russia nonsense going on in the States. I mean, this is one of the reasons why people are pushing it, because it dovetails very nicely into the Russian bogeyman on the stage, okay? I've watched the coverage in the U.S. on the cable stations. It hasn't gotten a whole lot of coverage, but what it does is it basically says, well, there they go again, up to their nasty stuff. That's how it's been played there, not nearly the same it has been in the U.K. What is Theresa May's ultimate goal in all of this? I mean, you know, over the last few days, a anti-aircraft battalion has returned to Germany that was withdrawn at the end of the Cold War. I mean, is this where we're going to go here? Because I can tell you, if NATO wants to fight a conflict with Russia, we will pay very dearly for it. I always tell my viewers here, listen to the words, not to the bluster, because Russia is prepared. Go ahead, Annie.
No, I think it's very interesting that Jens Stoltenberg, who's the head of NATO at the moment, was one of the first people to say very clearly, after the UK claimed it must be Russia, that we need to wait for proof. Emmanuel Macron also did that in the first week after this attack. But France was also, you know, very rapidly pulled into line to sign up and say, no, the UK knows that Russia carried out this attack. So this is going on. I think there might be two strands here. First of all, the UK wants to puff itself up like an animal under threat to look bigger because it's got Brexit going on, it's got potential trade wars going on, it's being expelled from EU out of its own choice. So it's under threat as a country. But secondly, it wants to try and project its power through NATO. So that's what they're trying to do, I think. But, you know, it's a major problem for the UK because it's caught between a rock and a hard place, between America and between the growing Silk Road Eastern Bloc, which is Russia and China. And let's not forget the influence of China. Whatever half the countries in the EU have said that they are going to support the baseless, evidence-free, evidence-light assertions of the UK government at the moment. Half the EU countries are not doing so, but also virtually every other country in the world is not doing so. And China has categorically said it is supporting the Russia position, that they want to wait for evidence. We are still lacking in evidence.
You know, Charles, I like what Annie said there, because what May's government is doing is it's showing Europe that it's still very important to have relations with the UK, irrespective of what's going on with Brexit. And, of course, it's proof positive that the special relationship with America is meaningful, because the UK will remain a surrogate of the United States and the European continent. Go ahead.
Yeah, to emphasize Annie's point just now, I mean, it's the number of countries that have pulled out diplomats is in its 20s. There are 190-odd countries in the world that haven't pulled out diplomats and haven't backed Britain's line on this, and that's worth considering. The world is not, as the West likes to think it is, EU, Australia, Canada, and the United States. It's plenty of other countries besides. But going back to the main question there about motivation, one needs to think about that Britain has a long history, even as Boris Johnson was boasting the other day, of being in the forefront of confronting what it calls the Russian menace. But this goes back, of course, hundreds of years into imperial times. And so when we look at the timing of this to discredit Russia just before the presidential elections, just before the World Cup coming up, and then also just before the British local elections coming up in just a few weeks' time, in which, before this incident happened, opinion polls showed Theresa May was going to do extremely badly. And now, largely because the media has 100% backed her on this, in blaming Russia, that now she's starting to ride high in those opinion polls. And so when we look at motivations, concern for this incident, Britain has many motivations, and as we know, of course, also has the capability to carry this out. It doesn't mean Britain did carry it out, but it has the motivation and the ability, just as Russia does.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on toxic relations. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go back to Jim in Washington. You know, if we could just kind of broaden this out, because I think one of the things that's being missed and being lost, actually, are some very fundamental principles that we expect from the state and our media. And those are the presumption of innocence, due process, and the right to dissent. All three are under savage attack by this cabal of liberal corporate media and governments, okay? And these three issues that I mentioned are the pillar of Western society, and they're being crushed. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I guess, Peter, I would say welcome to the 21st century. I mean, that's nice to talk about all those knee breeches and powdered wig principles in our Constitution that we got from our mother country, but they simply do not apply anymore. You know, this was mentioned earlier that the Brits will have egg on their face if the proof doesn't come out. I don't expect the proof to come out, and yeah. I don't have any reason to suppose that the OPCW will not be as corrupted in this process as the so-called Jim Joint Investigative Mechanism was on accusations against Syria. Look, let's look at the bigger picture here. For over a year, we've had this whole Russia collusion hysteria going on in the United States. Where does it trace back to? To the Russians? No. To Christopher Steele, an MI6 agent, who's got a connection, by the way, to Skripal through this Orbis outfit and this fellow, Pablo Miller is his name, that when we look at the relationship between the elements of the American and the British deep states, the various agencies, MI6, GCHQ, FBI, CIA, the other groups here that have been involved in this, I would say, conspiracy to not only subvert the American election, but to make sure that our relations with Russia stay worse and getting worse all the time, that this is almost, in a way, a phase two of what we've been seeing for quite some time in terms of a political campaign.
Okay, Annie, I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question, and it's really quite serious. Is it possible that this incident is just a fabrication, that there is no incident? Because I keep looking at what is being presented to the public, and it is so sketchy. There's no physical forensic evidence been provided to us, okay? I mean, there's even talk that this Yulia's a Facebook page was accessed when she was in a coma or something like that. I mean, what happens is when we're not given information to the public, then you start kind of rattling your brain, like, well, what does this all mean here? I mean, it seems to me that this is what's happening. This is how this whole process is being presented to the public, that it does create an enormous amount of doubt, at least in some people. And I think if you look at the comments under articles written about this, there's an enormous amount of skepticism. And then they either stop comments or they delete all of the comments. I'm not convinced the public is so on board with this. Go ahead, Annie.
I don't think there is a huge amount of trust, no. And I've been invited on to other media outlets in the UK to discuss this. Why does 70 or 80% of their respondents not trust what the media is saying? The hosts of the shows are absolutely astonished. And actually, why should they not be astonished after the mess of the weapons mass destruction with Iraq and other lies that have happened around intelligence, you know, torture, extradition, all the rest of it? So this is within a context, a wider context, over the last two decades of distrust of what our governments, what our intelligence, what our military tells us. That's why people are not trusting what's going on at the moment. In this particular case, yes, there has been an absolute dearth of any form of intelligence, any form of evidence, any form of information from the medical team trying to care for the Skripals. So, of course, people are going to be questioning this. And there has been a lot of very hard evidence coming out about what the Porton Down Scientific Institute might be doing, what other institutes around the world might be doing. I mean, evidence has been published in a magazine called The New Scientist, which is a very prestigious scientific magazine in the UK, where scientists have come together and said, actually, these so-called Novichok family of agents might and have been replicated around the world over the last couple of decades, and it's certainly over the last decade. when the formula were published by the guy who blew the whistle when he defected to America. So we have a situation where all this information is out there in the wild. So for our UK government to immediately say it must be Russia, it could only have come from Russia because this was developed under the Soviet Union in the 1970s, it's so specious. Of course people are suspicious.
Right. You know, Charles, you know, in all of this, you know, what is the May government and the Americans, what do they expect Russia to do under these circumstances? If they are not presented evidence of their guilt, they're just supposed to say they're guilty. That is childish. I mean, I can't comprehend why they would even do that. It's like May's government is talking to a wall. It doesn't want a reply. It doesn't want any kind of dialogue here. So what do they expect the Russians to do? Go ahead, Charles.
Well, of course, they expect the Russians to do as they have done, because the Russians have had no alternative but to act in a way as if to say, well, we are the accused party. Until you provide us with some kind of evidence, we aren't in a position to be able to comment on that. And then Russia has taken that further by saying, but hey, why don't we, bearing in mind the circumstances of this, why don't we actually have a joint investigation where we can put our input in there? And that may actually come to haunt the British side that they haven't actually taken up this opportunity because, of course, in the last day or so, details of another potential motive in this case have emerged. It's been emerged, for example, that Yulia Skripal, only a couple of days before this poison attempt was made on her and her father, something like $200,000 came into her account from the sale of her father's house through his divorce. And yet also it seems that only last year, her brother, who died supposedly in mysterious circumstances, was the beneficiary initially of that money. And so here, if these reports are true, this could start to really ring alarm signals for the British government that actually, oh, here we actually have a potentially alternative motivation for this kind of killing. If, for example, this kind of drug could be obtained, and we hear from the reports that the people concerned had high links to Soviet days intelligence officials. And so therefore, it may well be that there is a reason for us to have a joint Russian and British investigation. Certainly going back to what you said about the investigation itself, the police have been extraordinarily quiet on this. Yeah. There have been no CCTV issued. There's been no descriptions issued and so on. I would say, perhaps to defend the British police, if it's possible on this, they may be keeping their cards close to their chest because they may be acutely aware of the political pressure that they are likely to be placed under if there's any suggestion that the inquiry is not going the way the government wants. After all, as I mentioned earlier, the British government has said without doubt there is no alternative to Russian government being blamed. So people have a right to ask, what chance, therefore, is there of a non-political pressurised British police investigation of even considering alternative motivations and possibilities?
You know, Jim, just from what Charles said right there, it sounds like, you know, the British authorities, the police authorities sound like the FBI during the American campaign. Intensely politicized, corrupt, okay? Again, I was talking about some of the major features of the rule of law, and it seems to be tumbling down all over again because you've already drawn your conclusion and you work backwards, okay? I was in graduate school for a long time. That's called bad science, and it's actually immoral. Go ahead, Jim.
It is, and frankly, Peter, I think that's the charitable way to interpret this.
That we're on TV. We're on TV.
I would tend toward the other thing, is that the people making these accusations themselves do not believe them, and in fact know that they are not true. And if I were in the Russian shoes, and it's not my job to give them advice, but instead of saying, well, we didn't do it, where's the proof, we want a joint investigation, I would turn around and say, look, these two Russian citizens were poisoned on your territory, Great Britain, within 10 miles of your top chemical weapons facility. Unless we hear otherwise, we presume you're responsible for this. We demand proof that you're not. Look, this idea that somehow the British are just sort of jumping to a conclusion, I think is much too fair here, and too fair to the American government as well. I think there's a deliberate provocation going on here.
I do too.
And that they know that they're making false charges, just as is in the case of the WMDs in Iraq. I think most of the people making those accusations knew full well that Saddam Hussein did not have WMDs, but they were making the accusation anyway because it served their purpose.
Well, Jim, they never would have invaded if there were weapons of mass destruction. That's logical, okay? They never would have done it. That's why they did it, because they weren't there. Annie, you told me before on this program that Sergei was under the protection of the British authorities. Is there going to be any kind of snafu about that? They were actually supposed to be protecting him, right?
Of course. I mean, he was a high-value agent and asset working in Russia for 10 years. He was reporting agent names back to MI6. So people keep calling him a double agent. He wasn't. He was a British agent who'd been turned and betrayed Russia. So that's the situation that he was in. But, you know, the Russians rinsed him clean of information before they released him, of course. MI6 rinsed him clean of information, of course, when they received him. That's why they allowed him to go free, pensioned him off, bought him a house, allowed him to live an open life. So, you know, again, in terms of motivation, why on earth would the Russians try and kill this guy now when he's been, you know, free for years? He'd been rinsed clean for years. I've always said for many years, and I think Charles would probably agree with this, that in terms of motive, it's going to be down to something he would be working in now, in the last 8 years where he's been living in the UK now. If he was involved in the Christopher Steele dossier, that might lead to motivation. He might have been working with other people as well. We just don't know. I would hope that the intelligence agencies and the police would be investigating those leads at the moment to try and work out who actually might have had a motive to try and carry out such an attack.
Annie, I mean, and let me go to Charles here. I mean, considering what we've all said on this program, I mean, the authorities are not looking for alternative motives, because once you instantly say you have the culprit, there's no. It's like O.J. Simpson, okay? I mean, you know, he did it, okay? And you know, why would the authorities look for the killer of his wife and her friend? I mean, they know he did it, okay? And in this case here, they've already determined the outcome. So why would they even look for alternatives? Charles, go ahead.
Well, it may be. I mean, with the British police is perhaps one of the least politicized police forces in the world. I speak as many years as having worked in the British police, and I know full well they can be susceptible to political pressure, and you can't imagine a situation of where there's more political pressure than this, where the government has declared absolutely certainly that Russia did it. But it may well be that one of the reasons why they rushed to take action before the police investigation is because they actually suspect there may be a chance the police investigation won't prove their case. And certainly I think the police will be wanting to look at alternatives, if only to dismiss them. And so I agree with the logic of what you're saying, that it seems that the government has, without any doubt, already come to its conclusions before any investigation. We should wait, as should the British government have waited, of course, and the American government and all those that have followed it should await the outcome of the British investigation. And then, if necessary, we can pick holes in it and see where they've gone wrong or where they've gone right. But let's await the British investigation, and let's await to see what the OPCW says. Although I suspect, again, no matter what the British investigations say, it'll be spun in the media to support the government.
When the report comes out, we're going to have you all back again. Many thanks to my guests in London, Brussels, and in Washington. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.